So I want to talk now, in that spirit, a little bit about the last words of the Buddha, be an island, like in the article that you read. And why he said it just before he died, and what does it mean? And he said it as a kind of summary of the path. Which is interesting. So his last words were, monks, be islands to yourselves, be a refuge to yourselves with no other refuge. Let the Dhamma be your island, let the Dhamma be your refuge with no other refuge. And so that's more or less the last words. He had a few more words to say, but more or less. And I think it's, to at least to my interpretation, it's because life sweeps us away, because we actually do need to deal with basic fear, insecurity, uncertainty. Life sweeps us away. And the Buddha said, this mind is always frightened. This mind is always agitated about problems that are not yet risen or problems that already are risen. And the Buddha said, there's only one way to release us from fear. Not apart from enlightenment and austerity. Austerity is simplicity. Not apart from restraining or the rasen, I suppose, restrain the senses. Not apart from letting go of things do I see any safety for living beings. It's quite a radical statement. There's no, in the end, to release ourselves really from existential fear and anxiety about problems that we have to deal with and cope with and struggle with. There isn't any other way, according to the Buddha, except awakening, restraining the senses that are running after, I want it better, I need this, I don't need that, I must have this, it has to be like that. And letting go. So in letting go, we find safety. Now, it's quite a radical statement, and important to think about it. And the basic reason is, and we need to kind of deal with insecurity and fear right now, before we start talking about safety and refuge and trust and so on, because we are swept away by conditions. We are captured by conditions. We are sucked in to the conditions of life that happen to us. This happens, then this happens, then we're struggling with this, we're disturbed by this, we're too busy, we're too this, we're not enough like that, we've got this, but we want something else. I was reading this morning the craziness of politics in Britain. The whole thing is collapsing. Nobody can understand what's going on. The British newspapers say that the Houses of Parliament have turned into a ship of fools. What? And of course you don't need to go so far. Even worse here, I think. And, we're just so reactive. We're so busy reacting and defending and needing and struggling and coping with life. And then as someone said yesterday, it's great to be in retreat, and the minute I leave the retreat, the whole thing comes back. and drowning us. So we have this dialogue in us. We can't ignore it and we can't shut it down. We always want something better. And Shakespeare said, better is the enemy of the good. Which is a nice phrase. And the Buddhist path is pretty extreme. I mean, just think about, it's extreme and it's not extreme at all. I don't want to be extreme about being extreme. But the Buddha did say, you know, if you want to practice for awakening, get out of your family life, leave your family, leave the village, leave possessions, leave your bank account, leave politics, and wearing pretty well rags that you pick up from the rubbish and food that people give you as leftovers from their lunch, that's all you're going to get. And there's nothing that you possess and no house, and you just wander around and sit under trees and just get what people give you. Whoa. So we have to kind of address that. So the first point, or the first direction, is what you could call viveka. And viveka is going on a retreat. Viveka means separation, being quiet, and stepping out of the mess. And the Buddha, as I say, did it very radically with his monks, but we can do it, and we do it. Coming here is viveka, is stepping out, is taking a step and saying, I can let the whole mess go on by itself without me, thank you very much. It's one of the big classical arguments for conscientious objection, meaning he's not fighting, not being a soldier, is actually this statement, without me. You fight your wars without me. And so that's viveka, but it's not just stepping out and running away, it's running into what's important. So viveka, if you look at the translation in the Sanskrit, it has these two meanings. It is stepping out, but also stepping in to what matters, what's important. And it's something that we all have. So we really need to see the pain, face up to the pain of being swept away by life, of being controlled, of being in constant struggle with conditions and trying to get things better. And we need to see the dukkha of that. We need to see the pain of that. Because from there, we can do viveka. We can step out. And well, we need to see the, and especially the fear, because it's fear that makes us, fear is a big word. Should we say insecurity or wanting things, coping? I mean, it's very, very simple things, daily life things. Just getting the kids off to school in the morning. How do you do a thing like, when I look at my children, my daughters, in their daily life, this challenge of getting the kids off to school in the morning. Wow. On time. When they're all chaos. Just looking at that, such so small, simple thing, you think, wow. So we need to be aware of it, and we need to be aware of the power of it and how we struggle to get life right and to get the kids off to school, never mind to get ourselves money and a house and a life and a family or whatever we're directed. And in order to step out of the prison of conditions, we need some autonomy. We need to see this. The two things are, we need to see the dukkha of being controlled by conditions, and we need to have the power to step out. I think sometimes it's so much, was so much easier for me in the 60s to step out. It's just so much easier. And now today it's so much more difficult because the insecurity is so much greater today. And the anxiety and the concern and what will be. And if I step out, where will I get to? What will happen to me? The anxiety level is much greater in society, I see, in the Western world. We had it good. We had real optimism. Yeah, we can step out because, you know, like Timothy Leary said, turn on, tune in, drop out. That was the Timothy Leary slogan. And we could do it because life was play. After the war, Second World War, we were, you know, the 60s were just like, life is play. So why not turn on, tune in, drop out? So there's a certain truth in that, but today we need more, I think, more determination, more clarity, and more autonomy. And that's where what the Buddha statement is about. Be an island to yourself is about being autonomous and saying, I have the power to stand on my ground and step out of the race, of the non-stop coping based on insecurity. So this sense of autonomy is an answer to the insecurity that makes us run and be busy all the time and struggle. Kind of, we need to understand that dynamic and really feel what the Buddha meant by that. Really feel our autonomy, that we're standing on our ground. The Dharma is not about being weak. Sometimes people think, oh, you Buddhists, you're just, some meditating, going off, having nice little retreats and then and just accepting everything and, you know, Makaplimi, say? Makapel. Mitkaplim. But it's not at all, it's the opposite. Because if we don't make a change and we don't stand up, who's going to do it? Everyone else is kind of all... We've got to be right there and steady in our life. And that's what the Buddha meant, be an island to yourself. And then, if we're an island, firstly, we have the power to step out of things and to see what's going on. We have the power to be the kid that saw in the story that the emperor had no clothes. A melech in melech irum. The kid could do it because the kid was strong enough to do it. He wasn't sucked into the whole consensus that made a story that the emperor has, king has clothes. No, he was able to stand up and say, wait a minute, I see what's going on really. So we do need that steadiness to be able to see what's really going on and not swept away. So I know I'm repeating myself, but it's a sort of take-home message for all of us. Stand our ground. And I know it's difficult. In pressure from parents, from money, from society, from politics, from got so much pressure. But somewhere or other, we need to kind of really feel there is autonomy, that we have autonomy. So how do we do that? So autonomy can't be just created by itself. And so when the Buddha was asked the next bit of this quote, so the Buddha said, and how do you become an island to yourself? And the answer is right back to Kita Aleph. The answer is so obvious. You just settle looking at the body as the body. keen, interested, aware, mindful, putting aside the hunger and the worry about the world. Stay looking at feelings as feelings, looking at mind as mind, looking at Dharma as Dharma. Keen, aware, awake, letting go of the fear and anxiety about the world. So, it's just back down to the two things fit each other. In other words, if we're steady, we are ready to be like the boy looking at the emperor and saying he has no clothes, because we are ready to be courageous enough to see things really as they are. And seeing things as they are gives us the autonomy. So they work together. The autonomy or the steadiness gives us ability to see things differently, to be fresh, new. I see things as they are. I'm being totally honest. I'm not dressing anything up anymore. This is the way things are. My pain is my pain. My life is my life. My experience is my experience. My body is my body. I'm taking it just as it is. And when you do that, that creates steadiness. And we stand our ground. Why we stand our ground? My body is like this. My mind is like that. The world that I see is like that. And I'm taking responsibility for what I see. So it's kind of the two fit each other. So I have to say that the Pali word here that is used is not sati, mindfulness, it's apamada. So sometimes these words are mixed, but they're slightly different. So mindfulness, sati, is shining the light on experience, seeing things clearly, directly. And apamada is being careful as well, is taking care. It's a little bit more towards erunut, erut and erunut. So erut would tend to be sati or mindfulness, erunut would tend to be apamada. So when he said, be an island to yourself and practice apamada, he used that word. So it's a slight difference in quality, but it's taking care of things as well. It's taking care of ourselves. It's being a little bit more mothering and holding ourselves and not just being kind of like a computer, mindful, I see. It's being in the now, both of them. It's being with experience directly, but it's a little bit of a quality of sorting out things. Or Yeah, in a minute. Be happy and keep your questions, because we want to have a dialogue together. We do need also to deal with anxiety and fear directly, because the fear will knock us down. We try and step up and we come up and we watch the body and we watch the mind and so on, and then boom, we get knocked down by worry, concern, anxiety, and daily life anxieties, problems, what we have to deal with, what we have to solve, what needs to be done. So it keeps coming from the back. Fear is a big word, but I'm using it for all those, even those small life insecurities of, oh, I have to sort this out, otherwise it's a problem. So even in there is some anxiety of what will be. Of I have to sort this out, I have to deal with this, this is a problem, or this might be a problem. So it's on all those levels, also big fears and little fears. So I think one way we need to do is really watch the reactivity that we, tugvatiyut, watch ourselves doing that, watch ourselves defending, watch the Haganah, watch the arising almost automatically of daily life anxieties with kindness and with apamada. Watch, take care. Yes, I have anxiety coming. Yes, I'm trying to sort something out which is otherwise could be a problem. Yes, but I hold it with kindness and attention and a little bit of care. Eronut. The Buddha was saying all the time that he went into sitting all night in cemeteries, Beit Kvarot, or in the middle of the forest, to try and deal with fear. And he said in the end, he had dealt with a lot of fear, but not only because he sat in Beit Kvarot, but also because of ethics, because of a pure life, because of mindfulness, because of calmness, all the Dharma tools helped him to deal with existential fear. But he had some left over. And he said in the end, the only thing that really got rid of fear completely was when fear arose, don't change your position. So if you're walking when fear comes, keep walking. And if you're lying, keep lying. Good advice, not so easy, but the reason is that if you're behaving, your behavior is seeking safety, then that gives authority to your fear. So if you're looking for safety behaviors today could be, for example, switching off into screens and Facebook. It's a safety behavior. I can just run away from all this craziness and I can just sit in a corner and watch a screen. It's a safety behavior. And
it's flight.
It's flight, yeah, it's flight. So we just need to know that we do have safety behaviors and don't give, if we know that if we keep going there to those behaviors, it gives authority to the fear. It doesn't sort the fear out, it actually sustains it or keeps it. We give it power. So don't change position. And I've told stories before about my own life, so I don't want to go into the same stories again and again. But we do have in Klil Chazirei Bar. And they are very, very big and scary. They can be like, you know, this big. And if you meet one early morning, and I have done, whoa, what do you do meeting this kind of monster? But I always, when I do meet Chazirei Bar in Klil, I always remember this sentence of the Buddha. When fear arises, don't change position. If you're walking, keep walking. Standing, keep standing. Sitting, keep sitting. And it's. I just do it. And somehow I'm still here. I think. It's important not to cover over our vulnerability, pagiyut, to allow our vulnerability. This is a basic, we're not going to talk about this so much, but this is basic to the Dharma. We don't run away from dukkha. Dukkha is a teacher. Our vulnerability, our pagiyut, our basic vulnerability that we feel as born into a body that is going to pieces, and born into a life that's also going to pieces. It is the nature of things. We do need to allow that, the vulnerability to be there, not to run away from it, not to cover it, not to escape, not to go into pretend it doesn't exist. So it, instead of vulnerability being a problem, we need to see it as a teacher. And this is dukkha. And this is why dukkha is one of the three characteristics, along with anicca and anatta. It's because it helps us to live on the edge and live with uncertainty. But that's truth of things rather than covering it over. So dukkha is an invitation to the truth of things. And when we live with truth, actually our life gets more joyful. So it works the opposite. If we live with dukkha, our vulnerability, actually our life becomes more joyful. Because we're living with truth. That we're on the edge. That we're just, because they're just about existing for a moment, and then we're gone. What helps us with, besides meeting honestly our anxiety, our vulnerability, the fears that come, what we do, what we cover over, meeting all that stuff, also feeling our basic autonomy directly in meditation and in life, meaning feeling basically okay. And it's really important that we have that other side, that yes, I'm vulnerable, but yes, here I am. There's Zil. I'm here. It's happened. I was born in a body. Here I am. What can be wrong? Nothing. So it's that okayness which we all also need to experience. And meditation is very, very helpful for that. Viveka is very helpful. Stepping out and sensing our okayness. And here we are sitting in a hall together, walking under the trees, listening to the birds. What's wrong? Nothing. We need to have that message again and again. Okay. And there can be struggle and there can be dukkha, but the two can be, we can hold both of them together. Yes, there's vulnerability, and yes, I'm okay. There's okayness. It's not so much I am okay, but there is okayness, existence is all right. Here is existence. Who am I to say existence is a mistake? Ta'ut. God made a mistake. Existence is existence, and here I am. So giving that basic sense of okayness, and obviously we do it in practice. The back hurts, but our hands don't hurt. And we're really encouraged to go to those places in us which are okay, and really appreciate, really experience okayness again and again and again. The Buddha, at some point, was in the middle of a huge amount of struggle and intense practice, and he recounts that the intense practice was based on a sense that he had to get somewhere where he wasn't now. And he suddenly remembered that when he was a child, he was sitting under a tree, and his father, who was a sort of a king, was in agriculture and had all the workers kind of harvesting the crops. And the young Buddha, as a boy, was sitting under a tree, and all of a sudden he went into a kind of deep state of joy and bliss and awareness. And suddenly, as a man struggling with himself intensely and not eating and sitting meditating for hours in the yogic way, he suddenly remembered that experience that he had as a child. And it taught him, actually, it's already in me. If I could experience it spontaneously as a child, what am I doing giving myself hell in the name of enlightenment? Well, they're my words, not the Buddha's words. But It's important for us to remember we have it in us already. We have that sense of okayness. We have that sense of space and liberation. It's not something we have to invent from scratch. It's just covered over, but it's not somewhere else, totally else. So, our journey is to find a place of rest in awareness, just to be able to watch the river of experiences passing by and feeling we're sitting quietly on the bank of the river and our experiences are passing by. I used to have a house in England, in a forest, Forest of Dean. That was also 1970, I think. And it was next to a river. And I spent a lot of time next to this river, just sitting there watching the river, because it had rocks in and it was shh. And the name of the river was the River Wye. So it's really stayed with me that I was sitting watching the River Wye flowing. So we watched the River Wye flowing through us. And as we watch the river of life flowing through us, as we do what the Buddha said, knowing and contemplating the body, the mind, and the Dharma, and our insights as they come and as they go, with mindfulness, with appamada, with care. Slowly, slowly, we become clear that some things can never be taken away from us. Then there becomes the refuge. Things cannot be taken away. Our awareness, Buddha mind, can't be taken away. Experiences can happen, dukkha can happen, but still there is a knowing, an awareness, a presence which cannot be taken from us. And so if it cannot be taken away, then what's the worry? There's some basic things that are there, that our basic okayness. We can have many difficult experiences, we can be sick, we can be all kinds of things, but something there is we let go. And we can do change, we make change. Of course we want to. If we are hungry, we eat something. If we're sick, we take a medicine. If we see where conflict is around us, we might go out and want to make peace. We want to help others. But we also let go of results. We don't know. We can let go of what will actually happen. We do the best we can. We take our medicine, but we're not in charge. We have to allow that vulnerability to be there. We can try and make peace in the world, but we have no certainty, anything. We don't know. Karma will decide in the end. It's not up to us. So that's basically what I want to say, that in the end we grow a view of reality which is much more like the sky, which cannot be damaged by clouds. And this sky-like mind gives us a refuge and gives us support and gives us an ending of fear and anxiety. And it's growing all the time as we practice, as we step out of the craziness, turmoil, confusions, viveka, step out and practice appamada. What's the heart of a sage? It's a Zen poetic comment. What's the heart of a sage? A gentle breeze under the sky. Very nice. A sage, a tzaddik, or wise man. What's the heart of a wise man? A gentle breeze under the sky. It's a nice comment to finish. So we'll just take one moment for contemplation, and then we'll have some questions and discussion.